And we'll continue now with an article on page A17 with the headline, Allman Brothers co-founder, legendary guitarist Betts, dies. This article by Stephen Wine and Russ Bynum of the Associated Press. Guitar legend Dickie Betts, who co-founded the Allman Brothers Band and wrote their biggest hit, Ramblin' Man, has died. He was 80. David Sparrow, Betts' manager for 20 years, confirmed the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer died at his Osprey, Florida home. Betts had been battling cancer for more than a year and had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, Sparrow said. He was surrounded by his whole family and he passed peacefully, Sparrow said, by phone. They didn't think he was in any pain. Betts shared lead guitar duties with Duane Allman in the original Allman Brothers Band to help give the group its distinctive sound and create a new genre, Southern Rock. The Allman's music, which combined the blues, country, R&B, and jazz within 60s rock, influenced many other acts, including Lynyrd Skynyrd, Kid Rock, Phish, and Jason Isbell. My first concert was Dickie Betts in Coleman's in Rome, New York, in 1983, blues rock guitarist Joe Bonamassa said in an Instagram post Thursday, crediting Betts with inspiring his favorite electric guitar model, blew my mind and made me want a Les Paul. Guitarist Derek Trucks and his wife and bandmate Susan Tedeschi posted on their joint Instagram account that Betts was one of the best to ever do it. Trucks joined the Allman Brothers Band in 1999. His uncle, Butch Trucks, was one of the band's two founding drummers. Bassist Barry Duane Oakley, son of Allman Brothers founding bassist Barry Oakley, honored his Uncle Dickie on Facebook, saying, if not for him, I don't think I would be a touring musician. Founded in 1969, the Allmans were a pioneering jam band, trampling the traditional notion of a three-minute pop song by performing lengthy compositions in concert and on record. The band was notable as a biracial group from the Deep South. Duane Allman died in a motorcycle accident in 1971, and Oakley was killed in a motorcycle crash a year later. That left Betts and Allman's younger brother, Greg, as the band's leaders, but they frequently clashed, and substance abuse caused further dysfunction. The band broke up at least twice before reforming, and has had more than a dozen lineups. The Allman Brothers Band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995 and earned a Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award in 2012. Betts left the group for good in 2000 and also played solo with his own band, Great Southern, which included his son, guitarist Duane Betts. Forrest Richard Betts was born December 12, 1943. And was raised in the Bradenton, Florida area near the Highway 41 he sang about in Ramblin' Man. Betts grew up listening to country, bluegrass, and western swing and played the ukulele and banjo before focusing on the electric guitar because it impressed girls. At 16, he left home for his first road trip, joining the circus to play in a band. He returned home and with bassist Oakley joined a group that became the Jacksonville, Florida based band Second Coming. One night in 1969, Betts and Oakley jammed with Duane Allman, already a successful session musician, and his younger brother, and together they formed the Allman Brothers Band. The group moved to Macon, Georgia, and released a self-titled debut album in 1969. A year later came the album Idlewild South, highlighted by Betts' instrumental composition In Memory of Elizabeth Reed, which soon became a concert staple. The 1971 double album At Fillmore East, now considered among the greatest live albums of the classic rock era, was the Allman's commercial breakthrough and cemented their performing reputation by showcasing the unique guitar interplay between Allman and Betts. Their styles contrasted, with Allman playing bluesy slide guitar, while Betts' solos and singing tugged the band toward country. When layered in harmony, their playing was especially distinctive. The group also had two drummers, Trucks and J-Mo Johansson, who is black, and Butch Trucks. Duane Allman died 4 days after Fillmore was certified as a gold record, but the band carried on and crowds continued to grow. The 1973 album, Brothers and Sisters, rose to number one on the charts and featured Ramblin' Man with Betts singing the lead and bringing twang to the top 40. The song reached number two on the singles charts and was kept out of the number one spot by Halfbreed by Cher, who later married Greg Allman. Betts' guitar soared on Ramblin' Man, and the song underscored his knack for melodic hooks. It was the album's only top 10 hit, but Betts' catchy 7.5-minute instrumental composition, Jessica, recorded in 1972, became an FM radio staple. Betts also wrote or co-wrote some of the band's other best-loved songs, including Blue Sky and Southbound. In later years, the group remained a successful touring act with Betts and Warren Haynes on guitar. Greg Allman and Butch Trucks died in 2017. After leaving the Allmans for good, Betts lived in the Bradenton area with his wife, Donna. And that article appeared on page A17, and it had the headline, Allman Brothers co-founder, legendary guitarist Betts dies. And it was written by Steve Wine and Russ Bynum of the Associated Press.
From page A6, Henrico will rehab dam damaged by Gaston in 04, written by Sean Jones of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Henrico County is ready to start a project that would rehabilitate a long-damaged dam in Chamberlain while updating the conjoined lake with new plantings and a walking trail. The dam at Lake Overton in the Three Fountains North neighborhood is positioned between county athletic fields and Three Lakes Park and Nature Center. The dam was damaged in 2004 when the remnants of Hurricane Gaston traveled through central Virginia. The heaviest rainfall from Gaston fell in the Richmond area. Between 5 and 14 inches of rain was recorded between Lunenburg County to the south and Caroline County to the north. A flash flood in the Richmond metro area killed 8 people, flooded countless areas, produced 13 tornadoes, and caused an estimated $130 million in damage. The dam no longer meets state safety requirements. Public Works staff said the renovation would fix failing embankment slopes, replace the principal spillway, and upgrade the auxiliary spillway. Vegetation will help with the embankment's stability. The Lake Overton Dam itself is owned by a civic association, the Three Lakes Civic Association, for the surrounding neighborhood. It is listed as a low-hazard dam, meaning that failure is unlikely to cause a loss of life or significant property damage. Lake maintenance is quite an undertaking, and we've been monitoring the dam and the lake alongside the Civic Association ever since the damage first appeared, said Roscoe Cooper III, Fairfield District Supervisor. Along the way, we saw an opportunity to support not only the neighborhood, but also our environment by taking the lead on this project. In addition to repairing the dam, Cooper said the county would be planting native vegetation that will improve water quality, add erosion controls, and create a new walking trail that will connect the lake to Three Lakes Park. This means people in this community have easier access to the park, and people in Three Lakes can easily visit a fourth beautiful lake, Cooper said. The project is estimated to cost about $1.5 million, which will be covered by a grant from the state. The benefits of a project like this are also far-reaching, benefiting all of the waterways along the way to the Chesapeake Bay, said Terrell Hughes, Director of Public Works, which will also tremendously benefit from a reduction in pollutants into the waterway. Last week, Henrico announced it was entering the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Community Rating System, a program that recognizes and encourages community floodplain management practices. Henrico was rated a Class 5 star out of 10 under that system. About 1,500 structures in Henrico are located within a floodplain. Again, Henrico will rehab dam damaged by Gaston in 2004, written by Sean Jones of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
And we'll continue now with an article on page A12, which is the business page. The headline is, New 1870 Restaurant Set to Open in Midlothian. this article by Colleen Curran of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Chef David Dunlap, owner of Midlothian's Chef's Kitchen, officially opens his second restaurant in Chesterfield County next week. The former Quirk Hotel chef's latest venture is 1870, a French-inspired steakhouse at 13310 Midlothian Turnpike in the heart of Midlothian. The name of the restaurant comes from the 19th-century building it now calls home. Built in 1870 by the Jewett brothers, Jewett Bass Hall is the oldest still-standing commercial building in Chesterfield, according to a history website. "We drove by it often. We live right down the street," and said, "How cool would it be to open a restaurant there?" Dunlap said. "It has that Charleston vibe with the two front porches, but we never saw it for sale." Dunlap and his wife, Brittany, moved to Richmond in 2015 from Northern Virginia, where Dunlap worked as a chef at Elaine Ducasse's Ardor restaurant. In 2021, Dunlap opened Midlothian Chef's Kitchen, which RTD dining critic Justin Lowe called a fine dining destination producing the most elevated and inspiring cuisine this side of the Powhite Parkway has ever seen. The Jewett Bass Hall was most recently home to real estate firm Jenny & Company. Before that, it belonged to a church. When a real estate deal fell through, Dunlap and his wife swooped in and were able to snap up the property in October. Classically trained as a French chef, Dunlap said he has been thinking about opening a steakhouse for years. 1870 is an a la carte steakhouse with five steaks on the menu, where diners get to choose their sauce or butter, from au poivre to horseradish butter, as well as side dishes such as potato gratin, asparagus with truffle breadcrumb, and classic creamed spinach. Steaks run $32 for the hanger to $76 for the 20-ounce seared ribeye. Each main dish comes with one side and one sauce. The menu also includes a bone-in pork chop, organic chicken breast, and rack of lamb, plus seafood options such as rockfish, salmon, and vanilla-buttered poached lobster. 1870 aims to blend French cuisine with old-world Virginia flair. "We really tried to stick with the historical part of Virginia," Brittany said about designing the restaurant and the menu. For the past few months, the couple have been busy renovating the space themselves. "It was a blank slate, one really big room," Dunlap said. David built the bars himself, one downstairs and the other upstairs, while Brittany focused on the interior design. The first floor is the main dining room with one long L-shaped banquette and cowhide print, tables with white tablecloths, white painted brick walls, and classic Virginia-style paintings on the walls. Upstairs is a bar that will offer a more casual setting and be open during business hours, as well as two private dining rooms called the Jewett Room and the Bass Room. "We live here in Midlothian. We saw that if we wanted something a little more unique that wasn't a chain restaurant, you had to go into the city," Dunlap said. "There's a ton of people out here. We felt we owed it to ourselves and them to fill that void." Right now, 1870 is in soft opening mode. It will officially open on Tuesday and will be open for dinner Tuesdays through Sundays. And that article, which appeared on page A12, had the headline, "New 1870 Restaurant Set to Open in Midlothian." And it was written by Colleen Curran of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Turning to news from Virginia Public Media, HRBT expansion marks breakthrough as boring machine completes first new tunnel, written by Ryan Murphy of WHRO. Crews of workers from Spain who have dug an 8,000-foot tunnel under Hampton Roads for the past year waved Spanish flags and cheered from the top of a huge pit on the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel's North Island. First, moisture started seeping through tiny cracks in the concrete wall, then a larger crack formed and water poured through. Then, after a few seconds more of the crackling sound, the three-story tall circular section of concrete fell with an earth-shaking thud. Water used to cool the 430-foot-long boring machine, nicknamed Mary, poured out as the massive drill broke through concrete and into fresh air for the first time in a year. I think what we just heard was the boom heard round Hampton Roads, said project manager Ryan Banos. We've been waiting for this for almost 30 years, since the early 90s. It's a halfway point for us. Wednesday's breakthrough was marked with celebration, but moments later the small crowd dispersed and went back to work. During the next 5 months, Mary, the boring machine, will execute the world's longest three-point turn. Then she'll dig her way back to the Norfolk side, leaving two fresh tunnels to double the HRBT's capacity once the bridge and road work is done. The Virginia Department of Transportation announced last month that finishing the expansion project will take longer than originally planned. Initially slated to wrap up at the end of next year, VDOT now expects work to continue until at least the fall of 2026. In the meantime, HRBT expansion marks breakthrough as boring machine completes first new tunnel.
And we'll continue now with another article from the E section. This one on personal finance and advice, costly invites by Emma Nelson of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Weddings are allegedly the happiest day of your life, if you're a bride or groom. If you're a guest or in the wedding party, though, and this is your fourth wedding of the summer with your sister's nuptials coming up in the fall, and a best friend is getting hitched on New Year's Eve, the elation might have slowly drained away like all of the dollars of your bank account. The average wedding guest spends $611 per wedding they attend, according to a 2023 Bankrate survey. At the same time, 22% of adults have no emergency savings, and the numbers are even higher for younger generations in their prime wedding guest years. That mismatch can create a financial hardship for people that extend past the celebratory day, said Jema Erickson, senior financial advisor at Thrivent Financial. If you're trying to manage the balancing act of supporting your friends and family on their big day without going into financial ruin, or if you want to make your wedding day affordable for all invitees, here's some advice on how to celebrate responsibly. Emily Forrest Skernick, Director of Communications and Wedding Planning at Zola, said guests should feel free to depart from traditional norms governing wedding attendance, things like how much you're supposed to spend on a gift, that you have to wear a new outfit, or that it's impolite to decline an invitation. Everyone who's getting married and everyone who's attending weddings is living in the reality of an economy where we can't all afford to do everything, she said. It's okay to really realistically look at the wedding invites that you've received or that you think you're going to receive for the next year and what your budget is and how much you really can afford to spend on weddings. The key is to plan and plan early, Erickson said, creating a budget for each wedding, taking into account ancillary costs like the bachelorette party or going out after the reception. It's okay to say yes to some parts of the event and no to others. Explore cost-saving measures. Airline miles and hotel points can come in handy. So can coordinating with friends to share expenses. There are likely other guests facing the same constraints, Erickson said. During the wedding boom that followed the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, Julie France and her husband were invited to 5 weddings in a single year. They made it to all 5 but found ways to maximize their spending. As wedding guests, we count the costs before you commit. France, owner of Everyday Etiquette, a company that conducts presentations on manners and social skills, said, "You have to do it based on relationships, the closest that you have to a particular people, and then the financial component to that." If you're able to attend, Fran said, RSVP as soon as possible. If you were invited to be in the wedding party, you can take more time to decide. Once you've thanked the couple for the invitation and explained your situation, respond to them as soon as possible with a definitive answer. If the answer is yes, only death or severe illness should prevent you from attending, Fran said. If the answer is no, she recommends sending a handwritten note with an offer to celebrate with the couple after the honeymoon. Though you're not obligated to send a gift, she said, it's good form to do so, even though it doesn't have to be expensive. The couple bears responsibility, France said, for either making their wedding accessible to guests or accepting that some might not be able to attend. Guests should feel free to go in together on a larger gift or buy something off registry, France said. The intent of the weddings is, and should be, you're having this amazing commitment ceremony and you want those people that mean a lot for you to be there, and it shouldn't have anything to do with the money. A wedding is not a fundraiser. When building a registry, Forrest Schernick said, couples should include items at range of price points. Often the most memorable gifts are not the most expensive. As a guest, you can opt for renting, thrifting, or borrowing an outfit to save money, she said. You can also wear something you already own, even if you've already worn it to another wedding. France said she saved money by borrowing a dress from her sister for one wedding and wearing a dress she already had to another. For everyone involved in the big day, honesty is key with others and with yourself. As a guest, it can be just as easy to swipe your credit card, Erickson said, but it's important to consider the long-term consequences for your finances and other things you want to accomplish. It's really taking a true self-evaluation to see if it's in your best interest to attend, Erickson said. And if it's not, you may have to say no and send that gift card and wish them well and try to reconnect with them after. And that article from the personal finance column of the e-edition of today's Richmond Times-Dispatch was headlined Costly Invites, and it was written by Emma Nelson of the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
And from the news briefs on page A37, Poland and Germany accuse men in spying schemes. The dateline is Warsaw, Poland. A Polish man was arrested on allegations of being ready to spy on behalf of Russia's military intelligence in an alleged plot to assassinate Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, Polish prosecutors said on Thursday. The Office of Poland's National Prosecutor said the man, identified only as Paul K. under Polish privacy laws, was arrested in Poland on Wednesday and accused of being prepared to pass airport security information to Russian agents. If convicted, the man could face up to 8 years in prison, the statement said. In Germany, two German-Russian men were arrested on suspicion of espionage, one accused of agreeing to carry out attacks on potential targets, including U.S. military facilities, in hopes of sabotaging aid for Ukraine. The two, identified only as Dieter S. and Alexander J. due to German privacy laws, were arrested Wednesday, Germany's federal prosecutors said.
And that's all the time we have for reading today's Friday, April 19th, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Dave Winter, along with Harriet Coulter, for the Virginia Voice. This program is brought to you through the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.